Hi, everyone, and welcome back to CliffCast, the podcast that brings you information and insights on nutrition for runners and other active people. I'm your host, Ricardo Balash, and today we have a very special person on CliffCast, Nancy Guest. Nancy Guest is a registered dietitian, a certified personal trainer, and a certified strength and conditioning specialist, and has been working in private practice in this field for almost two decades. She's currently completing her PhD research on the effects of gene-nutrient interactions, in other words, nutrigenomics, on athletic performance at the University of Toronto. Her research and work is based on understanding each individual's genetic composition and crafting a nutrition plan based on that, one that is so specific that it can optimize performance like nothing else. A lot of how our body reacts to certain nutrients is due to our genetic composition. By better understanding this, we can know exactly what to eat, when, and how much and why. That way, our athletic performance can skyrocket, at least according to Nancy. In this episode, she shares what she's learned in her research and tells us some true stories of how she's seen her clients evolve based on their nutrigenomics. Nancy's been a consultant to athletes performing in the Olympic Games, and many of her clients have gone on to win silver and gold medals. She's based in Toronto, but came to Cliff because she's interested and engaged with what we're doing here. We're happy to have her here at the Cliff Bar Studios. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to CliffCast.
Thank you for having me.
You are coming all the way down from Canada, right? Are you in Toronto? What part of Canada are you from?
Yes, I am. I'm from Vancouver, born and raised, but I now reside in Toronto the past 8 years. So I do miss the West Coast. And Vancouver, of course, is a sister city to San Francisco. And my first time here, and I love it.
Great. Well, welcome. So I'm curious your background. Maybe we can start with how, so you're a sports registered dietitian, how you got involved in nutrition and working with athletes. Maybe you could give us a little bit of info on your background.
Sure. When I first attended university, I took animal sciences pre-vet because I wanted to be a vet. My passion is for animals. And after completing that, I worked with my vet for a summer, my equine vet, so specializing in horses. And I realized I was just too sensitive to see sick animals and certainly having to put animals to sleep. So I thought that's not going to be my calling as a career. So I floated for a few years and got really into fitness for personal reasons and realized that this would be a great career. So I started personal training, became certified as a personal trainer, started my own company, and at the same time realized that nutrition and fitness really go together. And I couldn't really be offering fitness in a holistic approach unless I was including nutrition. And because there's a lot of conflicting information out there, I realized I'm going to have to go back to university and learn from scratch the physiology of the body so I'm giving out factual information. And so I went back to school, did a degree in dietetics, loved it so much, I stayed and did my Master of Science in Nutrition. All three of these degrees were at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And during my second degree and doing my master's, I was working, had my own company, and that was growing. And I started incorporating more sports nutrition because a lot of dietitians or nutrition people didn't have a good background in sport and exercise physiology. And so I was developing a really unique skill set of knowing about sport and exercise as well as about nutrition. And I just found over the years, keeping myself well educated, both in exercise physiology and nutrition, gave me this unique skill set to work with more elite athletes. And so that has been my passion. I then certified as a strength and conditioning coach and then went on just 3 years ago, started my PhD looking at genetics, nutrition, and athletic performance. And that was just sort of one of those eureka moments where I was attending a conference and I saw my PhD supervisor presenting on nutrigenomics. And I thought, this is the future. This is the next generation sport nutrition where we can really design precise diets for athletes based on their DNA. And so it's a growing field, and I'm very excited to be a part of that. And that's sort of the next big step for me is going with this globally and helping athletes all over the world.
Well, it sounds incredibly fascinating. I'm going to ask you about the future of nutrition in a moment, but I'm curious about the early experiences that you had with working with athletes and nutrition. What was that like? What were you learning initially that really brought you to where you are today? What were you learning about coaching athletes and nutrition? What was going on there?
Well, I feel that a lot of athletes are getting the training right, and there's a lot of focus and support on training, whether you're a national level athlete, whether you're preparing for the Olympics or a varsity athlete or even a high school athlete. Of course, you have the coaching support and you have a lot of strength and conditioning support, especially over the last decade. But nutrition always seemed to be the last thing that was addressed. And I feel that you can be a great athlete, but you won't be a world-class athlete unless you're getting that competitive edge of also addressing your nutritional needs. And I think that's what a lot of coaches leave out. And a lot of athletes aren't realizing that that can really be the difference between first and 10th place is addressing your nutrition. And of course, at the Olympics, the difference between gold and fourth place is huge as far as your career as an athlete. So my experience was nutrition wasn't given enough emphasis, and I was seeing in my everyday working with athletes as a strength and conditioning coach, adding that nutrition to it, that they were really excelling in their sport far more than their peers that weren't addressing nutrition. So I really feel that that was giving them an edge that their peers didn't have. And of course, then this is just helping with the developing the whole field of sports nutrition as athletes realize the ones that are excelling and doing better than they are looking at their diet for that additional benefit.
I've often heard that nutrition is the last thing athletes nail down when they are in the process of training for something specific or just in general. I'm also curious, what are some of the more common nutrition-related mistakes or misinformation that you come across, especially with maybe some of the elite athletes?
Well, there are quite a few. One, I think there's often a lot of emphasis on supplements, and people are looking for the magic bullet. Whether you're an athlete or not, you're looking to get leaner, change your body composition, have more energy, build more muscle. And I think everyone can sort of fall victim to that, and they're looking for a shortcut. So with our busy lives, we're looking for a way that we can do that more quickly and more efficiently. And I think that is a real flaw in an athlete's program. They really have to stick with the foundation, the basics of a good, solid training program, as well as a good, solid diet. But on top of that, addressing the special needs that an athlete has to have fuel before training, during training, after, making sure you're having your protein for recovery, making sure you're hydrated. The average person doesn't have to think about this to the same degree because they're not having such intense physical performance, even though we perform at school and at work. An athlete's physical demands really separate them when it comes to addressing their nutritional needs more precisely.
So it sounds like it's a general broad strokes. As an athlete, you should be approaching nutrition in a balanced way, eating properly. Are there specific sport needs that you work with? So maybe you're working with a downhill skier versus maybe an endurance athlete like a runner or a cyclist. How do those differ in your experiences?
Well, I think it's not so much the difference between winter and summer sports, but more so the difference between a power athlete or a team sport athlete or an endurance athlete. Mm-hmm. And they do have different needs. And this is usually attributed to body composition needs for that sport, weight for that sport, as well as the energy expenditure for that sport. So a lot of power athletes may have a very low energy expenditure because the type of training they do might be intense for 30 seconds or a minute, and then there's a longer rest period, where with endurance athletes, they're going for often many hours at a time. So mm-hmm. It's a different type of training, different nutritional needs, and also having a more muscular build as opposed to having a leaner, lighter build, depending on your sport. So some sports, of course, you need to be light, and others it's an advantage, such with hockey players or football players or wrestlers or boxers, to have more weight behind you and more strength and power.
So specific sports might require certain diets or nutritional needs. What about individual athletes? How do individuals differ from a nutrition standpoint?
Well, interesting you ask, because that is a very key area of my research that I'm doing right now, which is our genetic differences. So what I study is a field called nutrigenomics, and genetics is a very broad field of research, but as a nutrition researcher, I'm looking at the science of nutrient-gene interactions, and that's what nutrigenomics is. It's basically how your body is responding differently to foods, to micronutrients, to supplements based on your DNA. So we're all very unique, and it's important that we have personalized nutrition and a personalized plan that is aligned with our DNA, as opposed to this one-size-fits-all broad nutrition recommendation, which is often just based on sex and age and maybe your sport. So all 23-year-old male hockey players don't have the same nutritional needs. An individual hockey player may have food intolerances or food preferences, or maybe they're vegan, or perhaps they have a different response to vitamin D or vitamin C. They need more or less of that. Perhaps genetically they have impaired iron absorption, and that's something that we can see genetically. So this is a whole field of research that's looking at genetic variations and how this can affect basically optimizing your performance and truly reaching your genetic potential.
And what does the process look like? If I wanted to personally figure out how are my genes interacting with nutrition and the sustenance I take in, how would I go about doing that? And how does it work?
Well, we have genetic tests that I'm involved with a company. I do a lot of research for a company called Nutrigenomics Sport in Toronto. We're just launching an athlete genetic test in the next few weeks. And although there are some genetic tests already out there that are more based on health, this is the first one that's looking at athletic performance. And the actual test just requires about a quarter of a teaspoon of saliva. You spit into a tube. You shake it up with some liquid preservative that's in the tube. You seal it, and it's mailed off to the company where they send it to the lab for analysis. So the whole test takes about 30 seconds, so very easy to do. And based on that small bit of saliva, we can look at many parts of your DNA and all of the ones that are related to nutrition responses and needs. We can identify and see how you differ from somebody else and what's unique to you, and how you may modify your diet to align with that DNA and help you perform better, be healthier, optimize your body composition, and the list goes on of all the things that we can look at with regard to nutrition and other performance factors to maximize your performance and your health.
And so when I do this test, what do my results look like? What are you telling me, to do or not to do?
Well, to be more specific, for example, we have there's one gene that affects your utilization of vitamin C. So if you have a certain genetic variation, which we call the risk variant, which means that you have a risk of something negative if you don't change what you're doing as far as diet goes, the risk variant shows that you have impaired vitamin C utilization, which means you need to get more vitamin C from your diet. And so I would then design your diet with more vitamin C foods, and that's sort of a direct gene to diet bridge that we would use to improve your health and performance. Now, based on that same vitamin C gene, some individuals are very efficient at vitamin C utilization. And that means that you would have to be very careful of taking vitamin C supplements, because for a runner, for example, an endurance athlete, part of your training is improving how many mitochondria you have, which are basically the powerhouses of your cells. And we know that too much vitamin C or too many antioxidants can actually interfere with your adaptations to your training and have a negative effect. So somebody that has very efficient use of vitamin C in their body doesn't want to have too much vitamin C, because then that will affect how their aerobic capacity is improved with training, and it can have a negative result. So most people feel that vitamin C is benign and that you can just take as much as you want and you'll just urinate out the excess, but that's actually not the case. It isn't benign, and it has very far-reaching effects, especially in endurance athletes, as far as this type of training to improve your numbers and efficiency of mitochondria.
I'm curious also, what are some of the other attributes as an endurance athlete and as a runner that I might find interesting from these tests?
Well, it's a very exciting field for runners because many things that this genomic or genetic testing looks for really applies to the runner. So, for example, we have a gene that affects your risk of tendon injury, especially Achilles tendon injury. And so, therefore, depending on your genetic variation, you might be at risk of having the propensity to get injured. So, therefore, as a runner, you would want to limit your hill training as well as your plyometrics, things that can be stressful to the Achilles tendon. So, this is how you can be preventive in your training by knowing your genetics. So, that's an example that isn't nutrition per se, but certainly is applicable to a runner. We also have a gene called the actin 3, which shows your dominance of fast twitch or power muscle fibers versus your slow twitch or endurance muscle fibers. And if you have the knowledge of what type you are, perhaps that can help you with your training to know that you might have more difficulty developing power and developing muscle compared to another genotype or genetic variation where you can more easily build muscle, and that may modify your training. In addition, there's another gene that is responsible for your ability to clear lactate. So many runners know if they're going running at their lactate threshold or they reach above that threshold or they're running a hill, you get the burning in your legs. That's the buildup of the lactic acid or the hydrogen ions produced from the lactate. And genetically, some people can clear that very easily and others can't if you have, as I mentioned, the risk variant. And so therefore, if you're not good at clearing lactate, you might look for a supplement that would help you with that. So a buffering agent such as bicarbonate or beta-alanine. And so this is where the sports nutrition really comes into play. Based on your genetics, we can see what supplements might benefit you, particular to your DNA. And of course, we don't want athletes taking too many supplements. So if you are genetically able to clear lactate effectively, we wouldn't want you to take that supplement because it's not going to be as effective for you, and we want to limit what supplements we might use with you. Another very interesting area is caffeine, and that's what I'm specifically researching as my PhD project at the University of Toronto. And I'm looking at all the parameters of exercise, so power, strength, anaerobic capacity, and aerobic or endurance capacity. And I'm looking at different levels of caffeine and seeing what is the genetic profile behind your response to caffeine as far as health as well as performance. So some athletes we know, when we look at the research, not every athlete is getting a benefit from consuming caffeine, although many are. So those that are getting a benefit, let's say a moderate benefit, or those that are getting an exceptionally good benefit, that's a difference in their genetics. And some that may have adverse effects and they should avoid caffeine. So I'm looking at 120 athletes and seeing how they respond to caffeine genetically, and we're going to be able to provide that information. So not only caffeine as it relates to performance, but also there's a gene that's responsible for the metabolism of caffeine. So some people metabolize caffeine very quickly. They're fast metabolizers. Some more slowly, slow metabolizers. And you don't know this without the genetic test. Some people feel, oh, I'm a fast metabolizer. I can have a coffee and go to bed. But that you still could be a slow metabolizer. It just means that the stimulating effects of caffeine left your brain quickly so you could sleep, but that caffeine can be still having effects at on the rest of your body. And one of these negative effects is high blood pressure and the risk of heart attack. And we know that half the population has this risk. So half the population is a slow metabolizer, half is a fast metabolizer. And so it's important to get this genetic test for your heart health, but also as an athlete, if you are using caffeine, you want to know, am I getting a performance benefit? And if I am, and I also have the risk of the risk to my heart, perhaps I should just keep that caffeine around training, or I should minimize the use because I don't want to compromise my health. or if you're not getting a performance benefit from caffeine, then there's no point in using it. And so we want to really tease this out in the research and see what an individual needs as far as this supplement, because it is very commonly used in endurance athletes specifically.
Yeah. I mean, I know we consume a lot of caffeine here in the office, usually in the form of coffee, but of course our products, some of our products contain caffeine. I myself use it and it's wonderful. Who knows if it actually makes me faster, but I sure feel better. Do you have any really interesting stories of athletes that you've come across in your research that may relate to caffeine or other topics that maybe touch on outlier examples? I'm just curious about some interesting athletic stories.
Yeah, absolutely. For the most part, caffeine is improving endurance performance. And we do see that consistently with probably 3/4 of endurance athletes. And this is what the research shows as well. However, we do have some of these outliers that actually get very nervous and jittery, and a lot of that nervous energy is taking away from their physical energy. So although caffeine is giving them this false energy and stimulation, it's affecting their sport or performance negatively. However, we don't see that very often. We most often do see the positive benefit. And the way caffeine works is that it's working in your brain and making you feel like you're not working as hard as you are. So when you're running up that huge hill, you can actually run with more power when taking caffeine without feeling like you're working as hard as you really are. So it's basically increasing your threshold to pain or to discomfort. And we do find that that is a positive benefit for most athletes. We also do have some interesting outliers that when on a high dose of caffeine, it actually makes them feel sleepy. And that's something we have to look further into the genetics. I'm sort of right in the middle of looking at all my data and trying to figure out the genetic relationships. But some very interesting results will come out of this and help us to better understand your response genetically to taking different doses of caffeine versus placebo or not taking any caffeine.
And what is the sweet spot for caffeine intake during activity? What is the range you've found is most effective?
Well, interestingly, the research on caffeine, hundreds of studies, often use about 6 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. But we see in the past 5 years or so, a lot of the research is showing a much lower dose is just as effective. So in my study, I'm looking at 2 milligrams per kilogram of body weight and 4 milligrams. Both of those are much lower than the 6 milligrams. And I believe that through my research, we're going to be able to find the lowest effective dose, which is important because you don't want to take more than you need, especially if you do have that health risk to too much caffeine. So I think as far as the state of the research right now, that 4 milligrams per kilogram definitely will give most athletes a performance benefit, but it may be as low as 2 or 3 milligrams per kilogram. And that's something that remains to be seen.
Maybe you can help translate that into athlete terms. So if I'm out for, say I'm running a marathon or I'm out for a long run, how would that amount translate into a long distance run?
Well, I think a good strategy would be having a large coffee about 30 minutes before you start your race, and that'll sort of give you your baseline startup of the caffeine and the effects in the first leg of your race. And then I would continue with gels or blocks that contain caffeine throughout the race. And again, it depends how long the race is, but you probably would want to aim for about 50 milligrams per hour, but depending on your body weight again. So certainly starting off with the coffee and maybe 30 to 45 minutes in, having a gel or a block equivalent of about 50 milligrams of caffeine. If you feel like you're fatiguing, perhaps you can do another 50, 20, 30 minutes later. And throughout the race, perhaps aiming for a total of 200 to 300 milligrams. And again, that's going to differ a little bit with body weight, and it's going to take some calculations. But I'm a strong believer in a very individualized approach. So we would want to do this not only with caffeine, but with fluid, with carbohydrate. And each individual is going to have different different needs and different tolerances. And that's where this whole personalized nutrition comes in, and an exceptional benefit to athletes, certainly during competition.
Right, so I assume that going into a race, you would probably want to practice during the weeks and months of training to hone in exactly what that amount should be.
Absolutely, because you certainly don't want to be having any GI distress or any overstimulation that might affect your physical performance. So it is something we definitely, as sport dietitians, put a lot of emphasis on. Practice this in training, and certainly don't try anything new during competition.
So getting back to the nutrigenomics research that you've been doing, is there a particular case study or an athlete success story that we might find interesting?
Well, actually, a case study I do have is a runner, a young runner, 18 years old, and she's looking to get on the national team in Canada. And this runner is a vegetarian. She has a history of anemia. She's struggled with her strength training, even though she's good with endurance. She doesn't have the power she needs when she needs to sprint or she's encountering hills. And she also often lacks motivation, even though she's very skilled, very talented, and she can make it to the top levels. She often found that she didn't have the self-discipline to stick to her training or to prepare proper meals. So I did do the genetic test with her, and there's a very interesting effect of opening up a PDF file and looking at your genetic makeup. And we know then you can't sort of fly under the radar of general nutrition recommendations or general training. We know that this is your specific DNA. And I can attest to that myself, that I definitely had an increased heart rate knowing that this information was based on my actual DNA. So with this runner, there were quite a few things that applied. So one, being a vegetarian and not consuming enough iron, plus she had the genetic risk of not being very good at absorbing iron. So we really had to tackle this in a more aggressive way than just increasing iron foods in her diet, especially due to the fact that these would all be plant sources of iron, which are more difficult to absorb to begin with. So we did start her on an iron supplement. I worked with a sport med physician and myself. And she had a history of anemia, which obviously is affecting her endurance performance. So we were very aggressive with that strategy, which had positive results. She also had the risk gene for not having as much motivation as other people that don't have the risk. And we actually had her start training with music and starting to look into visualization techniques and just help her get into that mindset. So very interestingly, with genetic testing, we can also identify some discrepancies in mental focus or determination or motivation. And so that's something very important for an athlete to know, that they may have to spend more time with sports psychology or with other motivation techniques. In addition, we found that her response to a high protein diet was something genetically important for her to put on the muscle mass. So we know that certain diets work for certain people as far as maintaining leanness or an ideal body composition or the ability to put on muscle. So genetically, we modified the protein in her diet to align with her DNA. She did have the risk variant with the caffeine. And so rather than her just consuming caffeine freely throughout the day, we just allowed her to have caffeine during training so she could maximize the benefits to her training without putting her health at risk by consuming too much coffee outside of training.
It's a little frightening because you don't think of motivation linked to your genetic being.
Absolutely, yes. You can think of your genetics as basically affecting your response to anything in your environment. And where a lot of this started was actually response to medications. And this is part of personalized medicine, and nutrition is a branch of that. And we know, for example, some chemotherapy drugs that treat breast cancer have zero effectiveness in some women, depending on this genetic variation, where the same drug would be very effective in another female. And so, of course, the medical community wants to screen for this and ensure that you're going to have the right response to medical treatment. And so the same goes for how you respond to exercise. We all know people that hit the gym for 20, 30 minutes three times a week, and they have, you know, a perfectly sculpted body very easily with little effort. And there are other people that are in the gym 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, and they really struggle with getting the response that they're looking for. And so, again, this is genetic, the way we respond to stress, the way we respond to environmental pollution, and the way we respond to certain foods that make us more sensitive or intolerant, such as gluten or lactose or a variety of foods. And this can all be traced back to our genetics. And at this point, we don't have all the genetic markers for every food and food substance out there, but we have a good foundation that is a good starting point to help athletes align their diet and their supplement use to their DNA to feel better, to be healthier. And of course, the most important thing for an athlete is improving their performance. I feel now that doing this research and seeing the results with athletes, I don't feel anyone can reach their genetic potential without addressing what these genes are holding, what information they hold that help us to change our training and diet for optimal performance. There are thousands of places that we can differ among individuals, so it doesn't make sense that we're giving often very generic diets and we're giving 2, 3, 10 athletes the exact same diet when we can expect genetically there are going to be 10 different responses to that diet. For example, back to the caffeine, there are actually over 100 ways that you and I can differ in our response and metabolism of caffeine. So these aren't minor variations. And this is the whole field that is surging right now. It is exploding, and it will be the future. Everyone is going to basically have a chip, a barcode that will have their complete genome on it. And you can do your grocery shopping and design your diet to align with your DNA to maximize your health and your performance, and to see how you should change your training, or perhaps how you should change your mental game and the training for that.
Wow. Are there different tests out there? What should people look for?
Well, something very important when choosing a genetic test, you want to make sure that it is not direct to consumer, but provided by a healthcare professional. You want to make sure someone is going to interpret those results to you. Because if you, for example, know that you have impaired vitamin C utilization, how is this implicated in your current diet? How are you going to change your diet to improve that based on your genetic information? And so it is important that you're not left to your own devices to do this. You want to have the dietitian or other sport science healthcare professional helping you with that. And a lot of these companies are direct to consumer, and they're trying to make a quick buck and look like they can give you all this great information, where meanwhile, once you receive it, it's just more confusing and perhaps more harmful than useful.
Overall, why do you think this field is important?
Well, as a researcher and a practitioner, I feel this field is very important. It's cutting edge. It is the future. And it's another tool in our toolbox. So as a sport dietitian, I want to do my best to design a diet for my athlete that is individualized to what their needs are. And I feel in the future, all sport dietitians are going to use this information, and the test will grow. So right now, our current test, it looks at about 45 genes related to sport nutrition, food intolerances, body composition, the type of diet that's going to optimize your body composition and address the sport psychology needs. So I feel in the future, it's very important that we use all the tools available to us. And so if we're not looking at an athlete's genetics, we're not seeing the whole picture. And I don't think a lot of athletes at this day and age have a lot of time or patience to take months or years to get their diet right. We want to know right away. If I have an athlete that's preparing for the next Olympics and we have 6 months, I don't want to start playing around with their diet at that point. I want to know for sure what's matching their needs, their sport goals, and certainly what is aligning with their DNA, because that's certainly not something that's going to change, and that's as individual as you get, your own DNA.
Well, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed learning more about this field, and who knows, maybe I'll be inclined to try it out myself.
Excellent. I think everyone should, certainly to benefit your health and your performance. And I don't think any athletes would reject anything that's going to help them with performance.
Well, thank you, Nancy.
Thank you very much for having me.
It was so great to speak with Nancy while she was here at Cliff Bar. For more information, please visit powerplayweb.com. My name is Ricardo Balash. Thanks again for listening to CliffCast, and have a great run.